They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 132A, A Deeper Shade of Honolulu Blue. This is a mini pod recap show. If the main show is too long for you at 2.5 hours, this is just a little recap of what we talked about. Hopefully you hear about this and think, maybe I'll give the proper show a listen, or you just keep up to date with exactly what we're talking about. In this show, we talked about the training camp and looking ahead to what exactly we're looking for. Don't forget all the good stuff like Discord and college podcasts and like and sub and Twitch and feedback forms and all that good stuff. But not here to talk about that. A little bit of news that we actually have to address with Penasini getting put officially on the retirement list. Isaiah Bugs is the replacement at the nose tackle two position. Former OSU quarterback JT Barrett has been hired as an offensive assistant coach. He's 27 years old and last played in Edmonton in the CFL. And the PUP and NFI list has been revealed ahead of training camp. Jerry Jacobs, Romeo Aquara, and Josh Pascal on PUP. Jameson Williams and Natres Patrick on the non-football injury list. They can return any time. If they stay there until preseason game two, they have to sit out four games of the regular season. And anything you want to pick out from those bits of news?
I think the main thing for me is that the PUP list is a lot smaller than I expected it to be, and I am delighted. Obviously, there's no James Mitchell on there. He is fit and healthy. Obviously, the really big one is no Jeff Okuda on there. That's amazing. You know, we've been following his recovery since day one, since that horrible injury he's had. And with, you know, there's no player on the Lions we're rooting for harder than him this year. And to see that he's going to be fit for camp, hopefully he should be up to speed, get his preseason games, he's ready to go. You know, let's get on that Jeff Okuda hype train and get him back to where he should be and get him playing well. But yeah, outside of that, I'm glad the list was short.
Short and not very painful. Let's see what Bugs does. I have high hopes he could make the roster as nose tackle too. God knows we need someone who can play on the goal line. But let's see what happens. Right, training camp. Lots of things to look out for, none more so than scheme. We've got a new offensive coordinator who's had an off-season to do something. Do you expect a lot to look different now that he's had some time to properly put his own mark on things, Ant?
I do, yes. Like I've said, scheme for me is not important first thing up. It's the tempo I really want to see on this team. The tempo was slow. It was sluggish last year. We kept getting called for delay of game penalties. The verbiage was apparently too complicated. You know, that I really want to see that part of the game sorted first, because penalties are a killer in games. And they store your momentum and they cause you all sorts of problems. If you can clear that up, not something that requires skill on a football pitch. It just requires a bit of intelligence in the brain. You get the offense running quicker. You simplify the verbiage. You become a lot more dangerous. You put defenses on the back foot. More importantly, you get down the pitch quicker. Get yourself in a chance to score. Put less pressure on you to have to convert. So, yeah, I'm interested to see what he brings in. But, you know, he promised that this offense will be a lot more up-tempo. So I'm expecting him to deliver on that promise.
And then talking about coaches too, we waxed lyrical about how this coaching staff looks all across the board in terms of what they can bring, whether they're former players or not. We've got quality across the board. What are you looking for when it comes to seeing what the coaches are doing out there during training camp? I mean, for me, healthy competition last year was part of the theme, but you've got people like Shep, who's moving into a new role and perhaps has a bit more stamp his authority on the linebacker room as a whole. There's lots of other guys. I mean, Ben Johnson, we talked about him as an offensive coordinator, but his first time in a proper leadership role too, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I really love the dynamic of the coaching staff that we got. We've got leaders on there. We've got guys that we're training to be leaders. We've got promising young guys right at the bottom starting to work their way up. So I kind of like how they're doing it. They're creating a farm system for the coaches where they start at the bottom, work their way up, and we keep getting guys who are good at their jobs because we've not had good coordinators for years. But anyhow, I digress. In terms of the training camp, there's a few guys I'm looking to see really perform well. But the one more than any for me, I mentioned this on the main pod, I made a big deal about it, is Todd Wash, the defensive line coach. He needs to do good at his job this year. If our team wants to be a 7-8-9 win team, we need that defensive line to fire. He has been given lots of draft capital on that line. He's been given money to spend on that line because Charles Harris has just been paid. Romeo's already paid. Brock is on a good amount of money. He's got four brand new draft picks on there as well in the last 2 years. Got to make it work. That's a lot of investment in that line, and you have to show that you can develop the rookies and you can develop a scheme where you're beating guys, where you're beating offensive lines and you're getting after the quarterbacks. It's just something we've struggled oh so long to do since Nick Farley and Damakung Su left. So he's really under the microscope for me, and I hope he starts off on the job sharp. I hope that defensive line looks good because we really need it to.
And then looking at the players, and especially looking at, you know, the three groups of rookies, vets, and free agent signings that we've got coming in, without looking at the camp battles as yet, because we can look at them in just a second, individual players, is there anyone that you want to pick out as just something that you're looking to see or looking to not see?
So the undrafted free agents are where my mind is at. I know others will be looking at the free agents and that, but for me, we did really well in the undrafted free agency market last year. We got four guys who came in and produced in some way, form or the other. And because I watch a lot of college football, you know, there are some of these guys I know quite a bit about and I'm attached to. So the three for me, Demetrius Taylor, the nose tackle or defensive tackle, he plays all along the line. He did for App State. He's explosive. He can hit you in the interior. He can hit you on the edge. We need depth there. We bought Bugs in, but I think Taylor's the guy. He's coming fresh out of college. He's got a point to prove. I'd take him over a lot of these journeyman guys who are just going to be a body. So I think he's going to make the 53. I think he's going to be nose tackle too. And I'm looking for him to perform. And then obviously you've got the wide receivers, Khalil Pimpleton, Josh Johnson. Big fan of both. I think Khalil Pimpleton can challenge Khalif Raymond for a return role on this team or work in tandem with him, one or the other. But I really want to see that happen. And Josh Johnson has the best, possibly the best feat of any wide receiver who's even on our roster at the minute. He had a haul of broken ankles in college football. That's how good his feet are. You know, he balled out against even teams like Ohio State. He got 160 yards against them, and they have a plethora of five-star talents at corner, at safety, at linebacker. And he still produced in a big game against them. And, you know, I'm just really looking forward. I think he can offer something to this team. My gut feeling is he'll end up on the practice squad, but I think he can challenge for an outside spot if the Lions go more wide receivers on this roster. So the undrafted free agents is really what I'm looking at.
I mean, for me, I just want to see the guys who are coming in who've been injured last year or coming off injury but aren't on PUP or NFI. I want to see them come through unscathed with people raving about what they've done so far, no more so than Hefe and Levi. They're the two that I really, really want to see do something because, I mean, how much does it change his defense if Okuda actually does become even a shadow of what he hoped he would be? If he can be as good as Amani, that would be such a win for us.
Of course it would. I mean, like you say, there's a lot. Frank Ragnow comes back as the second best safety center in the league, which we know it can be. Massive for our offensive line. Romeo Okwara comes back as the dominant edge that he was at the beginning of last season. Solves a huge problem. Jeffrey Okuda comes in and finally starts realizing his potential as a third round, as a third overall pick. Huge for us. It can't be understated how much experience we lost to injury last year. These are all like new signings for this team because we barely had them for any of last season. So, you know, Ragnow, Okwara, Okuda, if they come back and the three are fit and firing, that's three brand new signings from last year. And that's how much it means to this team. So we don't have to pay out for them. We're just getting them back and we're getting them healthy. And that accounts for maybe another 10 players as well. That's how bad the injuries were.
Yeah, 100%. Let's move on now to talk about some camp battles. There's battles all over the place, and maybe we can just briefly talk about each one. We talk about them in depth a lot more on the pod. We took a long time to talk about this. But starting at backup quarterback Tim Boyle versus David Blough, I anticipate we only keep two quarterbacks. So I think one of these is going to go. What do you think? Who do you think is going to win?
I agree fully. We're going to take two. because it makes more sense to take a skilled player at wide receiver or running back because we need them more and they'll contribute. We don't need a third quarterback with us this year. Or you can at least risk them getting through to the practice squad. I wouldn't be upset if we lost either of them. My hot take is that Kurt Benkert comes in, the one who's just been released by the Packers and usurps the pair of them. And I know you disagree with this, but I and Ryan both think that there is an outside player going to come in and make quarterback to his own. I'm just not sold on either of these guys. They both had the chance. They both blew it. Let's try again. Let's keep trying until we can find someone who's at least merely competent in coming in relief of Jared Goff. But I think Kurt Benkert could be a sneaky outside bet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I could see it. I just don't believe it right now. But I could definitely see it. Running back three, then. You've already talked about potentially an extra running back as well. But running back three, not yet set in stone. Craig Reynolds, Jermar Jefferson, Godwin Igbuke, Greg Bell. They're all in the mix for running back three, four, five, however many we're carrying. How do you see this battle?
I want us to take four. I am a Jermar Jefferson stan, but I also understand what Craig Reynolds brings to this team. Reynolds, Jefferson, Williams, and Swift as a group, as a unit of four, all bring something different to this team, which you can utilize in different ways. And all of them have produced for us, or at least shown they can produce for us. So I want to keep them all, and I want to go into the season, and I want to get funky with how we play with them. Two-back sets, all this sort of stuff. Bring the guys and really confuse what we're going to do. But for me, I don't see it as a camp battle. Personally, I would just take both of them, and then anyone else, Bell or Godwin, that, let them fight it out for a position on the practice squad. I know I did use a hot take and say if we went with a fifth running back, I would put Khalil Pimpleton back there. If I can't fit him in my wide receiver room, then he's a Swiss Army knife and you can do something with him. He's got 5 rushing touchdowns in his last 2 years of college, despite being a receiver. So you can do something with him as a running back five, and then you negate the issue at wide receiver a little bit. I'd rather take a chance on that on running back five, and Bell and that can just go elsewhere or to the practice squad.
Talking about constricted opportunities at wide receiver, you're looking at a battle for 5 and 6 and maybe 7 if we carry that many between Cephas, Raymond, Benson, Kennedy, Pimpleton, as well as a few others. You've already talked about another one, or you did on the previous, on the main podcast, but it's a fierce battle with people actually rising to the occasion, no more so than Benson, who's had a good mini camp. Now, does that get him there? I don't know, but he's coming out of obscurity to make something of himself at least, and it means he'll probably get an opportunity elsewhere, if not here.
Yeah, and that's why I dump the quarterback three and take an extra guy on the wide receiver unit, because I think a potential wide receiver 6 or 7 is more used to us than a quarterback three is, and there's a lot of competition here. For me, Quintez Cephas is not in danger. I think he's a 53-man certainty after what he did last year and how well he played. The injury was unfortunate, but I think he's shown what he's worth to this team, and I don't consider him to be part of this camp battle. Obviously, he needs to play well, but I think he's above a lot of these other guys. After that, you know, may the best man win. And like you say, you know, we could be excited about any of them. If Raymond comes alive and he's a great receiver, then great. If Josh Johnson comes in, wows people with his footwork, he gets a position on there, then yeah, I'm going to look forward to that. If Pimpleton comes in, I'm going to look forward to that. And Benson, I mentioned Benson. If he, you know, pops like Brad Holmes says he does off tape and makes big plays and that, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. So yeah, may the cream rise to the top, but Cephas ain't involved in this.
I hope you're right. I fear you're wrong. That's all I'll say on that point. Tight end 2 and 3 and 4 potentially as well up for grabs. Now, Mitchell was not on that injured list, which is a really big boon for his chances of making the roster. I think now probably makes it a certainty, whereas I did think he was at risk before. Brock Wright also in this conversation alongside Devin Funchess, Garrett Griffin, Zane Silstra, Nolan Given. Derek Dees. Lots of people in the mix here. And how do you see it going?
Obviously, TJ's going to be really tight end one. No argument there. Hopefully, he stays fit as well this season. Brock Wright came in and did it for us on the field last season. And you know me, I value a player who comes in and does it on the field in front of me. And I can see what he's worth of this team. For me, it puts him above a player who might potentially be a bit better who I've not seen. I like to show loyalty to the players here when I can. And I think he's earned a spot again if he plays well in camp. He did more than enough on the field last year to do well. And then, obviously, I hope James Mitchell's in. Anyone who watched our draft commentary in the lead-up to the draft, I mentioned him a lot coming in as a potential tight end too that we could really do with. I called out his name on the day of the draft before we signed him when I looked at the players left. I said we'd draft him, and we did draft him. So I have a big affiliation to him. He's a good receiver. He's a better blocker than he's given credit for. You know, and I think, you know, when trained, again, if he has a good camp, he's going to be an asset to this team. So I would like to carry TJ. I would like to carry Mitchell. I would like to carry Wright. But, you know, there's a lot of guys in there, and I'm not going to write them all off. So, again, it's a situation. It's a Darwin situation here. May the fittest survive, and the ones who play the best and get on this team will have my full support, and I will back them. But Mitchell and Wright are my preferences.
100% with you. No argument there. Let's talk about the offensive line in general. We split it down in two on the main show, but tackle four, you've got Skipper versus Eze. Guard three, you've got Stenberg versus Kramer, Obeid, and Jarvis.
So tackle, I've said this on the main pod, but for me, it's clear I want to keep Obeid or Eze. It's nothing against Dan Skipper, but the trouble is for us as a team, we spent two first-round picks on our tackles. Therefore, I don't want to be spending more on depth for them. If I can build a tackle depth option from undrafted free agency, may it take a year or two, but Sewell and Decker are young and we can afford to wait that long. You know, I'd sooner do that. I don't want any of these journeymen knocking around, just taking snaps here and there, but they're not good enough to be a starter. Mike Nelson, love him as sixth man, but as a relief option for a decent amount of time at right tackle, he's atrocious. Same with Skipper, atrocious. We tried it with Paolo last year. He was worse than the pair of them. That's what happens when you're putting journeymen and guys who aren't good enough on your at tackle. So I want to keep SA and I want to develop him and train him. He's right now really good in the run game, but his pass game needs work, especially against speed rushers. But you can work with that. You can bring him in for big sets in his first year. Make use of him whilst training him in the pass protection aspect. So for me, it's clear cut. I want to keep Eze, but again, I say this, they've got to earn their place in camp, providing they earn it. There's an asterisk by all of these. As for guard, you know, I'll not go into it too much, but I'm a Logan Stenberg fan. I believe that he's been kept here for a reason, and I believe the issues he had in college were issues that were always going to take years to sort out, you know, his techniques, his fundamentals, his penalties, that could always have taken 2 years to develop, and they're still here for a reason. I'm hoping that we're about to see the finished result of this, so I want to keep him, and I want to keep Kramer, because Kramer earned his keep here last year. So those two, I want to see.
Beyond Kramer, I don't care. But there we go. Stenberg, if he stays, I wish him the best. I wish the best for all of the guys on the roster, but I just don't see it. I prefer to go Kramer and Obeid, but we'll see what happens. Let's transition now to the interior defensive linemen. We've got two real battles here, although you shut me down on the first one in the main pod, which is Brockers versus Onsarike as the starter. And then in backup, we've got Jashon Cornell versus Demetrius Taylor, Bruce Hector, Eric Banks, John Kaminsky, and then the new signing, Isaiah Bugs, as well.
Hang on. Shut you down there sounds really harsh. It's like I've been mean or nasty to you. All I said was I have a definition that I don't see starters in the defensive tackle position, because it's a position where you have to rotate frequently. No guy is going to play like 100% of snaps like you'll get at corner or safety or potentially at linebacker. You just can't. When you're dealing with the heavies in such a physical environment, you have to rotate them in and out. So I don't see starters. I don't see backups. I see good options at tackle there. So, you know, Brockers and Levi, we need both of them to fire. If Brockers and Levi are both playing to the best of their ability, then, you know, with a Leem, I'll rotate the three in and out. I don't care who starts, as long as they're used in situationally correctly. I don't care. Just as long as they're all there, I'll go for them. So I just really hope all of them perform. And I've already made my feelings clear about the depth chart on there. Demetrius Taylor, for me, is the one who will give us the most benefit backing up, because he plays anywhere from the nose tackle out to the seven tech. And it's not just it's a fad and he can do it and he's no good at it. He does it all. I've watched Appalachian State a lot in college. He can hit you with violent burst off the edge and go rushing after the passer. He can run block in the middle as well. Again, a lot to develop, but the upside to him is massive. And that's what you want from your development tackles. You want high upside, potentially build it into another star player for your team. No good just having a bog standard guy there because it won't offer you much other than a relief option for a few snaps. And that's not worth it for me.
I've been encouraged by the good play that Jashaun Cornell has had. I know you have a strong view on him. I think that the fact that he's come this far means that the organization has forgiven him for his past sins. And just to kind of judge him on the here and now, he's someone who in minicamp and in last year's camp kept getting sacks. And I mean, it may be against the second string offensive guys, but if he's showing out as the best of the rest, I think that gives him a great shot to be the depth piece. So I can see it absolutely happening for Jashaun. Now, do I want it to happen over anyone else? I really enjoyed seeing what Bruce Hexter did last year. But at the end of the day, it's going to be a fascinating battle one way or the other. I know you think that with Cornell's PED issue last year that he perhaps has had his chance, but I think that the organization's forgiven him that.
I'm just disappointed. We needed him last year, you know, to be that, you know, he was injured all his first year. They were very loyal to him throughout his injury. And then when we really needed him, when we had just rookies and Williams and Brockers there last year to really step in and make his mark on the team, he let us down. And quite frankly, we can't afford that in this rebuild. We need to land on as many players as we can and fill in as many holes as we can. And now, you know, just my personal opinion, but I'd rather give it to the rookies who have a point to prove now. I just think, yeah, I'm more disappointed. If he comes in as well, then maybe he can, but, you know.
I absolutely hear you. Let's move on to the linebacker position. And depending on what scheme we're playing, and don't get me wrong, I know we're moving 4-3, but 3-4 will feature a little bit. So you'll see a Jack linebacker position, albeit limited compared to last year. And what is Jack in 3-4 becomes Will in a 4-3. And, you know, there's not too many times we'll have three linebackers on the field too, because we will play 4-2-5 a lot of the time. But when we are in base in 4-3, when we are in 3-4, that blitzing linebacker really does come into the fold. And it's a specialist position for a specialist guy. And you've got Julian Aquara, James Houston, and Jared Davis all vying for that one position on the roster. I don't think that we potentially carry two of these guys. And so what do you reckon on this one?
See, this is an opinion that hurts me to say. It does, but, you know, I'm taking Houston over Aquara every single time. For me, you've just said it there. The hybrid nature of it, you need to be good in both aspects of the game. And for me, James Houston is a better pass rusher than Jared Davis. He is a better run defender than Julian Aquara. Now, Aquara is probably a better pass rusher at this moment in time. There is no doubt. And Davis, you know, might be a bit better when it comes to the run game. But Houston has both aspects of the game on them. Neither of the other two have both aspects of that game. Julian has always struggled to defend against the run. He always has. And I fear putting him in that position when you're trying to seal an edge, it's very vital that you're good against it. And he's not. And the same with Davis. You just cannot trust him outside of what he's good at when he's rushing the passer there, or he's, you know, you just can't trust him. For me, Houston is the fresh guy coming out of college. He can do both. He played linebacker at Florida for several years before transitioning onto the edge. That versatility he gives you in both aspects of the game, for me, just beats him out. And again, I feel bad. I really have felt rotten about like trying to write Julian off now. But again, I'm fed up of waiting for injured players and inconsistent players to become good. And for me, my tolerance level's just fallen to such a level, and he's gone above it now. I'd just rather start again with Houston and try and make that hybrid guy that this defense is going to want. So, you know, I'm sorry. I really, really, really am. But Houston gets it for me.
I 100% hear you. And actually, that's the best rationale I've heard for it so far. I don't think that you've quite explained it in that way before, even in the main pod. The fact that both guys facing him only provide one thing where he provides both. That's the most compelling argument I've seen for that so far. So that's quite interesting. I mean, even though it is going to be a blitzing linebacker position, at some point, you have to not blitz them as a surprise. And by doing that, you are relying on them being okay either in coverage or taking on blocks in the run game. You have to be. So the fact that he does that probably better on average than the two of them makes complete sense. Moving on to the cornerbacks and starting at the nickel slot corner position, you've got the incumbent AJ Parker alongside Mike Hughes. Ifeanyi Melifonwu, Will Harris can play either slot or outside cornerback, and Chase Lucas, the seventh round pick, is in there too. We probably carry a starter and a backup here, if not a third. So perhaps there's plenty of people to go around, plenty of spaces to go around here. What do you reckon is going to happen with this?
Again, this is tough because legitimately every player you've just mentioned there could make this roster. I think that is a legitimate thing. So for me, Hughes is the only one at the NFL level who's done it consistently. Now, he did it last year consistently at Kansas. He has that over a lot of other guys on this roster. And as we always say, corner is a position that takes years to fully develop. And maybe we've just landed on the fully developed guy at the right time, which would be big for us. So I would expect him to get in there. I classify as an outside guy, so I don't really want to include him here. For me, I take AJ Parker, and this is where it comes to, some might call it blind loyalty, but I've seen what he's done for this franchise on the field. He came into a rotten situation in basically no win. He's an undrafted free agent. He's coming into a room that's terrible. All the veterans have left. There's nothing in there but rookie talent that has not been recognized yet. And he comes in and does a very admirable job. I know he only rates as 50 on PFF or whatever, but to put an undrafted free agent rookie into such a bad situation and for him to perform the way he did and develop the way he did, you know, that sings volumes to me. He cares about this franchise. He wants to get better for this franchise. And I've seen him get better for this franchise. And therefore, my loyalty is to him. I want to keep him here and keep giving him the opportunity to become more than just a depth piece down there and maybe threaten a starter position. So, you know, I'd take him over guys that I've not seen or have not done it for us. And I know you disagree on this one, but, you know, I really want to see AJ do well, and I want to see the culture that players come into this franchise, they play hard for the franchise, and they get rewarded. For me, kicking the can with him now just sends out the wrong message.
It does send out the wrong message, but at the end of the day, I do believe that they believe in meritocracy as well as loyalty. I think it's equally important to them. And so I think that he does have a shot because he did well last year considering his expectations, and hopefully he only gets better from here. But you have a look at the pedigree of Mike Hughes. You have a look at the pedigree of Ifeanyi Melifonwu. You have a look at what Chase Lucas has done in his career so far. And I just think that their potential upside is all higher than AJ Parker's. That's how I see it right now. Now, I hope that Parker makes it, and I hope he does well, because he deserves it. He genuinely deserves it. I just fear for his future, given the pedigree of everyone else there. Moving to outside corner, we've got several battles. We've got one spot as a starter not decided. We've only got Amani or Awarie in pen. The rest of the guys, we're hoping, you know, one in particular might come good at this point and stay healthy. But there's a lot up for grabs, especially one starter. And then the backup positions to Okuda versus Melifonwu, Gilbert, Savion Smith, Boswell. And I think, so you've obviously got Will Harris there too to consider outside cornerback. How do you see it going?
See, for me, I move Ife out here and I put Ife at outside corner. If he has a good camp, plays well, then I'm giving him all the snaps in the world that I possibly can, providing he continues to earn them, because I think he has the potential to be our true number one outside corner. And I know Amani's in there, and Amani's earned his right to start. Absolutely he has, and he's earned his right to have another good season, hopefully. But I think for me, if he really is the future of this franchise, I just look at the way that he plays on the field, the way he makes on-field adjustments. You can see him develop in front of your eyes. You know, he makes a mistake, he learns from it. And, you know, his ceiling is incredibly high. And we were all excited when we got him. So, you know, I want to see him in there getting that slot. And then they say, hopefully Okuda and Jacobs can come through as well. And we've got a highly talented depth room then, where we've got several starters who will be backups, which is the situation you want to be in. You know, so I have high hopes here. But yeah, if he's the one that I really want to see progress.
I'm with you. If he's the one that's got such a high ceiling for me now, Hefe, we've talked about him, really high hopes for him. Fingers crossed he does the business. But if he, I'm hungry to see what he can do. And I don't care where it is, safety, outside corner, big slot. He's someone who I think it just has the world at his feet. And for me, he's shown the attitude to get over his injury and come in and do what he did. I think he's got the world at his feet right now. Moving on to the final one on the defense, safety battle, you've got Deshaun Elliott against Kirby Joseph, the squad of CJ Moore, Juju Hughes, and Brady Breeze. A starter position and several backup spots, and maybe a third safety as well, coming in there, and several alignments. What do you make of this battle?
See, as you've seen with secondary, it's very dangerous to just throw your rookies in there because it can have far-seeing consequences with them if you just put them in and they get burned all the time. That's why, as much as I'm not big on Deshaun Elliott and, you know, all these special teamers coming in, we think they're going to be first teamers right away, I'd rather Deshaun Elliott take the snaps because he is the more NFL ready. He's been in this league. He knows what's going to happen. I want to see what we've got with him first. And in that time, we can develop Kirby to be hopefully one of the guys of the future in that room. And like Ryan said, if we start seeing him by week 7, week 8, he might get some rotational snaps because we'll need to rotate him in every now and then. But serious snaps halfway through the season, that would be ideal. We don't want to burn him too early. We need to develop him correctly because we just can't afford to keep having a bad safety room every year. And his development is key to coming out of that hole that we're in that area. So, you know, hopefully the camp battle is fierce and intense between them. But, you know, just from a standpoint of view, I want to see Elliott start and I want to see Kirby be back up.
I see it. Right. And then just quickly finishing off with a couple of special teamers, Siebert versus Patterson for kicker.
May the best man win. Both proved that they could do it last year. So whoever they feel has the best camp, give them the job, because I do trust both of them. So, and hopefully the offense will be that better, much better this year, that they won't be kicking field goals from 45, 50 yards every week. Hopefully they'll get in a lot closer and it won't matter how much their big leg or whatever counts. But yeah, may the best man win.
And kick returner, split job. There's a kick returner and a punt returner up for grabs. Godwin, BK, Khalif Raymond, Khalil Pimpleton, Tom Kennedy in the mix for this one. How do you see it?
This is intrinsically linked with the wide receiver debate. It depends who gets in there first as to who your receiver is going to be. But I think I said Khalil and Khalif, I'd rather have as the guys in there, although I've not bigged up Khalif for the main team. But those are the two best receivers. I don't want to see Godwin anywhere near a return next year just because of the fumbling issues. He's had his chance. He failed. Sorry. Bye. Cutthroat business.
It's the two Ks, Khalif and Khalil. I want to see them both. Right, that's going to do it for our roundup of this episode. If you enjoyed the mini pods here, please let us know. We are running a little, what's the words? I've completely lost it. Feedback form. By the time you're listening to this, if you're listening to it on Wednesday, you will have just a chance before we meet on Thursday to have your say on the future of this podcast. Please do go and have a look at the link in the episode description on YouTube of the main show, which aired on Monday. Have your say, take you 5 minutes, and it will form the basis for our meeting and what we talk about, how to change this podcast. So please go and do that. Broad the Lines College Football Podcast will be airing today, as well as you're listening to it on Wednesday. They're going to be covering the AAC, right? Yes, yeah. I think AAC. And then we'll be back on Monday, August 1st, with the Why Support the Lions Hard Knock Edition episode. Don't forget to follow us on our socials, Draw the Lions UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. The group is Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide on Facebook and RawTheLionsUK.com on the web. Just remains me to thank my co-host, Anthony Fitzpatrick. I'm Matthew Turner, and I hope you enjoyed this mini pod. We'll see you on the main show on Monday. Let's go, Lions One Pride.
One Pride.